You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 65 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I'm your host, Dio Morales, and today I am joined by
Everything you heard about me is true.
Five tubes.
Because that's three more than two tubes.
And better late.
Yeah. Time to say that. I'm here.
All right, guys. So
we had a theme there. It was about Han Solo stuff or Star Wars stuff. And you let us down, Marcel.
He dropped the ball.
I don't know.
So our plan today is we're going to be talking about the FFG AMA that happened on Reddit, the Lando Falcon release preview that FFG put out there, and also we're going to talk about Solo, Star Wars story. We will give you guys, you know what, I think I'm going to have to put the spoiler warning here because we will probably be referencing the movie once we get into the Lando Falcon stuff. So if you haven't seen Solo, Star Wars story, look away now. This is your chance. And if you skip this part because you're that person who like skips ahead 5 minutes. I actually had somebody tell me, like, you know, I just skipped the first 5 minutes of every podcast. I'm like, but what if they say something important? They're like, whatever. I missed it. Like, all right. Well, that person might be screwed. So hopefully it's not this time and they watched Solo already. Anyway, before we go too far, I want to remind you guys that we do live stream quite often. You're watching and listening to our Monday live stream here for our podcast recording. Wednesday nights, we do league play and different types of streaming on the table. And we also do our Friday night grab bag. Last Friday, I played against Andrew Knuckles of the Birmingham Barons. We did some PS1 X-Wings versus PS2 X-Wings and kind of trying to just experiment with which one do we think is better. And that was a lot of fun. This Friday, there will not be a Friday night grab bag because I will be in Columbus, Ohio at the Origins Game Festival for the system open there. I'm going to try to stream. I have to say try because I am not 100% sure on the internet situation that's happening there. So at minimum, it gets recorded. This will be an informal stream / recording thing until I basically am knocked out of the competition. I'm going to be streaming. I'm going to be focusing on playing at that competition. Nate's going to be there. So will Allie. So we'll be there at Origins.
Unlock the hologram.
All right, let's go ahead and get into our discussion here. So FFG. On what was it, William? Was that on Friday?
Yeah, Friday. Yeah. Or no, it was a Thursday at noon.
Thursday at noon. There you go. FFG did this AMA to ask me anything, and people posted a bunch of questions in there. Overall, I would say that most of the things that they said we knew. I think they wasted some time on some questions. They gave some like really detailed answers, just kind of focusing on like the philosophy on things we already knew. There was a lot of questions left out there, but we will cover some of the new-ish things that they did talk about. Nate, what's that first one there?
Let me scroll through. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one. So that's my other thing. Clarification of the arc is only 0-3 because I know a lot of people are saying that, this was an issue that we saw with things like Torkoal Mux and all these other things.
Yep.
It was kind of one of those comments that we kind of knew. You're not allowed just to park Torkoal Mux in the corner and get the entire map and say, everyone's a zero. In firing arc is from 0-3. If you're at range 4 or higher than 3, you are not in arc. Am I right?
Yeah, that's okay. Exactly right.
Come on, guys. You, everyone knew the answer to that. You were just hoping something different.
So, yeah, that clarification for in arc is that in arc means 0-3. It's just part of the game text now. They clarified that points changes will happen about 3-4 times a year. Then when it comes to emergency point changes, they said that it is possible, but that's something that they're going to try to avoid. we'll kind of see how it goes. Marcel, what did they say about Force users?
Force users will pay a premium for having it available, so they're going to be expensive,
mm-hmm.
as they should be.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have,
yeah. I mean, it's a permanent soft focus.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how they balance now, it.
Wait, what? Does that mean that robots don't have a?
They have the calculate.
They don't focus. They take calculate, but it's still an action, so that it's not native, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That the force, like it's automatic once, like. Depending on how many you have, you know, you at least regenerate once per turn. When it comes to official events, some of them will limit the cards that you can use. They did talk about that in the very first reveal of second edition, but they just reiterated that even possibly in competitive events, they might even limit the card pool. We're not 100% sure on that, but they did allude to that a little bit. And one thing I did find interesting that upgrade slots could possibly vary from generics to named pilots besides just EPTs. That's one thing that they said that is a possibility. So I'm curious to see what how would they manage that? I guess is my question. Just like, oh, if this one pilot really shouldn't have access to gunners, they just don't give it to them? What do you guys think?
I think it's going to be more than a specific upgrade to a upgrade type. So, for example, force users get a native ability already.
Right.
And they do it at the premium of additional cost, so that's equivalent to a non-force user having an EPT at the cost of additional points. So maybe like a force user might not be able to use an EPT, or a low pilot skill may not be able to use specific types of upgrades. I don't think it'll be specific, but it'll probably be it may not be a specific upgrade, but it may be an upgrade type.
Yep, that makes sense.
The only thing that I could think of off the top of my head would be like a scum ship that a generic doesn't have the illicit, but maybe a named one does. Like they could vary like what pilots have illicits. I can't think of anything else that would shift though from ship to ship like that though.
Yeah, it was something that they just kind of alluded to. It wasn't a very specific thing, but somebody just asked that question, would you change that? And they were like, it's a possibility. So we'll see what they actually choose to do there. One thing that they did also mention is that upgrades in general are going to cost more than what we're used to, which I find interesting just because that means that the focus of the game will be less on the upgrades. I mean, the upgrades, of course, are going to be important, but it's about the ships and the pilot abilities, which I like. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I think they should be higher. Like, there's, if you think back, like, early upgrade cards that were worth only like 1 or 2 points, like just veteran instincts only being worth 1 point, you had to then gauge like all the other illicits based off of that only costing 1 point. So if they start high, they have more room to maneuver and cost.
Yeah, because that was not the issue originally, is that they made the TIE fighter way, way, way too cheap.
Hey, Nate, you're still super soft, dude.
Sorry, how about now? Is this better?
That's significantly Perfect. Better.
All right, sorry about that. Yeah, but wasn't that the original issue? Was that they made the TIE fighter way, way, way too cheap, and then they're constantly balancing everything against the 12-point TIE fighter. And so that was like their big issue for the longest time. It was like, oh, we can do this, but is it better than 8 TIE fighters? You know, kind of like that. So it's easy to start high and then come down, like Will just said.
Awesome. One other thing that I found interesting is that they also mentioned that they would be willing, because they do have the app, they would be willing to errata text on upgrade cards. I kind of thought originally that they might want to stay away from that as an option. Mind you, they did the question, I think Frank says, if need be, we would do it. But I figured that they could probably avoid having to errata card text altogether just by costing something out of existence. So, I mean, we'll see how it comes into practice and when it happens. Maybe it's more if something got misprinted, like caption Rex. might be a reason for an errata. But yeah.
Yeah, I think more than that, it's probably going back to like being specific to named or force users or something else. You know, initiative. If there's a card that is being taken advantage of, or is being, it's great for certain ships and it's costed well at certain ships, but it's really bad on a medium based ship, let's say, then at that point they want to be able to errata that, saying it's only good for these type of ships, I think. But is I thought that the whole point of going to like that I exactly but I thought the whole point of going to the app based was that you just can say digitally say nope, this it doesn't fit, so you can keep plugging at it and it won't fit.
Yeah, because remember we were looking for an answer with the whole Genius, you know, trajectory simulator thing for a long time, and we needed somebody to kind of like make a statement, and FFG couldn't officially make statements quickly, but this way they might be able to give us more information quicker.
Yeah,
like just not let the two buttons click. You can click one and then the other one doesn't click. Well, it's not allowed.
There yeah. you go. So, I mean, like a lot of online games will now kind of like patch things, and I feel like this is kind of patching the game now. Because you might have like, oh, here's a character in whatever video game you want to name and everything. It's too overpowered. It's too strong. What do? They patch it. So now it's easier for them to kind of do that. And it's a little more seamless rather than trying to like go back and reprint cards or fix cards that are already printed in your house in your hand.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something we can look forward to. Some of the other things here that are just kind of small things, it's confirmed that Calculate is for droids. I mean, we've seen that consistently through what we've looked at with the current pilots. They can also, because the Calculate is not as powerful as a Focus, these droid pilots will tend to be slightly cheaper than maybe an equivalent organic pilot. If let's say they have something like a similar ability, they would be costed just slightly less because the Focus is not as good as Calculate. Control elements will be rarer and also costed higher. So things like Ion and Stress and Tractor Beams are going to also come at a premium because they... I'm thinking, like, to me, FFG has recognized that, hey... being able to throw 30 stress tokens onto a ship is not good. So they want to make sure that if you want access to those type of, I don't want to call them oppressive abilities, but these abilities that prevent your opponent from doing their actions and things like that, you're going to have to pay for them because they're really powerful. As we've seen.
We could quote Chris Allen, call them agency burglars.
Correct.
Yeah, and I think this puts a premium on the control element that they can't outcost, which is flying good and blocking your opponent.
Blocking, oh my god, so much blocking! I'm excited.
Yeah, because blocking is free; you just have to know how to do it.
Yep. And lastly, one thing, it wasn't a super clear answer. Somebody had asked if upgrades had the possibility of costing more or less depending on a specific pilot, even on the same ship. And Frank and Alex and Max were kind of like, hey, it could happen. Like, they weren't very specific. I wish I had the time to go and find the specific one, because these are from my notes that I took on Thursday. But one of those, if you go on Reddit and you just search AMA, it's going to be the first one on there. The Reddit for the X-Wing TMG subreddit, by the way. You'll find it on there. And just kind of type in type in Fantasy Flight for like a search in your browser and click around, and you'll find everywhere where Fantasy Flight responded to a question. Now, what I want to get into are what are some of the questions that they didn't answer, whether that is because they chose to ignore them or maybe they didn't see them. We don't know. So our job here is to speculate away. Are you guys ready to speculate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one thing...
Just call me Scully.
For myself, as a streamer, it's extremely important to have a way to export squad data in order to create overlays for streaming. So one of the questions that that was asked by Muon, the gentleman who does Vassal, who leads that team, he asked, will the app export into some type of machine-readable format? And that was ignored, maybe because they don't know. But I know, for instance, Tome does not export in a way that List Juggler would actually be able to read it in any way. That's why with a lot of these official events, people have to hand type in, and I've done it a few of them, have to go ahead and hand type in all of the names and things into List Juggler, which isn't any fun. But we'll have to wait and see if there's going to be a way to do that, because if they don't have a way to export data for people to use it, whether it's for streaming, List Juggler, or the bunch of other reasons, MetaWing, then we're going to need some type of third-party solutions. And I know that there's people out there who have done it before, and I'm sure people are working on it already. What's that next one there, Marcel?
Will the app allow you to collect data to make adjustment choices? Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So, yeah, will the app have eventually comes out to what functionality will the app have? I'm not exactly sure all of the things that they said they would offer as far as, you know, within your squads and things like that. I know there's a lot of things that I have that I like from Star Tactics and from some of the other apps that are squad builders that I personally like. What do you own? What do you not own? What's your win loss rate? Making adjustments to copying a list and tweaking it a little bit, giving it a different name. There's just a lot of different things that other apps allow. So I don't know if this is that the question that does that, if it's focused on the same thing, but it's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, and the other thing is when it comes to FFG's adjustment of points, like, will they be monitoring? I hope, right? Because they're going to have access to everybody's list. If you have to use their app at an event, I'm just hoping, and a lot of people are hoping, that FFG will be able to extrapolate that data and say, huh, we noticed that a lot of people are using X Pilot. Man, everybody's flying Boba Fett and Fen Rao with blah, 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 whatever it might be. If they notice those kind of trends, are they collecting that data and will they use it?
If they did not answer, I will answer that. And the answer is yes, because all that data is mined automatically. I mean, that's part of what I do for work. So,
If you work with Cambridge Analytica,
yeah,
political jokes,
but yeah, there is no way that it does not happen. Even if they don't want to do it, even if they trip over it, the data will be there. It's there's no way not to have that data. The question is, are they going to do anything about it? And I think they answered it by saying they may do emergency point adjustments. Mm-hmm. in order to do those emergency point adjustments, they're going to have to quantify the data, which would be connected to this one. So I misunderstood it to be something else. But if it's, are they going to collect data? Oh, heck yeah, they're going to collect data.
Yep. So
possible one for not to.
What's the next one there, Will?
What's your strategy for keeping two dice attacks relevant for the duration of second edition? I think on this one they've already started with the reinforce and evade tokens, and basically like I've been starting to call them magic dice, where you could just like Poe with auto thrusters just magically turns two dice into two evades, C-3PO Miranda kind of stuff, where you just like magically get evades, getting that out of there. So a single agility ship can only ever block one of those attacks. That goes a long way, including even like three agility ships can't really token stack very well anymore. That should help keeping those two dice attacks relevant.
Absolutely. So I'm hoping, and we'll get to the Lando expansion here in a little bit, but that is a two attack dice ship. So I mean, if they're making a big deal about it, hopefully these two attack dice ships are going to actually be able to do something, which with the rebalance of the game, we'll have to wait and see. One of the other questions that were posted that wasn't answered was, what is the projected timeline to have all current first edition ships released into second edition? I mean, obviously we don't know, but I think that was a really good question that didn't get answered, because we have a ton of ships. Now, mind you, we have a bunch of them are in the conversion kits, but there's still plenty that are not, especially those Resistance, First Order ships. Are there any other ships that didn't get into the conversion kits? Oh, the Epic ships. There you go.
Yeah, but they already said that. I thought they already said that the second wave of second edition was going to have the First Order and Resistance kits with them, right?
Yeah, that's what I was understanding too. Plus, I talked to Frank at Worlds and I said, hey, what's going to happen with the Epic stuff? And he's like, oh, yeah, we're totally going to go back through and fix that. But the problem was originally with Epic is they kind of threw it together, but... I don't know. I don't think when they originally made it that they thought about balancing it, and Epic isn't really balanced, but that wasn't really the point at the time, I think.
Right.
To get something new and cool out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to think that like they're just going to come out with one Epic ship that has all of the Epic templates in it, right? So you just buy that one 2.01 and it converts all of your first editions?
That would make sense. Like, probably what they would do is the Scum 2 card. I mean, mind you, if they keep them, like, how do you have, like, the Raider is 2 cards and the Corvette is 2 cards, but the Gazanti and the Scum and the Rebel Transport are only 1. If they came up with a 2-card Scum ship that was second edition, that would be the one to convert everything.
The one that everyone's been speculating about that for years is the Talon card ship, the wild card, the bulk freighter. Because it's exactly the same length as a Corellian Corvette. But it's extended universe, so who knows if they'll want to do it or if they'll just pick something else from whatever show. Be cool. It'd be a nice little nod to like all the other people, but we don't know yet.
Yep, in the chat here, Lando's Lounge says, I'd be very upset if they don't fix Epic. And I would agree. I would also be upset because I honestly really enjoy playing.
You know, Epic. Lando does have a ship called the Lady Luck. That could be an Epic ship. I will look for the length of that ship right now.
While he's doing that, one thing people asked, which I want to happen, will the prequel ships happen?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Do we want it? Do you want it, Marcel?
I'm torn. I want it because it's more ships and there's a couple cool ones in there. I would have rather have that question asked, will the Old Republic ships be happening? Because I think that just gives you a lot more variety and it gives you a lot more stuff. But
Or maybe the question better to pose is something like, is X-Wing Miniatures game only Galactic Civil War and Force Awakens era? Because if they say no, boom. Because you got to think about the technology that the First Order has, like that we'll have at the end of Episode 9 compared to what they have at the beginning of Episode 4. Like that has really spanned a long time. A lot of changes in technology. So,
yeah, I think one of the things they're going to run into, I don't know how they're handling it now with the whole transition of, you know, Legends and all of that. But a lot of the Old Republic stuff, you don't know how much of it is actual canon or not anymore.
Right.
And how strict they have to stick to all of that. So a lot of the old books, a lot of the old video game, well, I guess the video games have to be canon, but a lot of the old content may not be quote unquote canon anymore. So maybe they can't use it. I that's one of the things you run into with, you know, with this type of licensing, but I'd love to have some of that Old Republic or even the, you know, the Separatists and all as many factions as possible. It would create a balancing nightmare, but
that's what the app is for, right?
Yeah.
Could you imagine little Jedi starfighters running around with force abilities?
I'm in.
Oh, man.
I'm in.
You could just run like two of them and that'd be enough for a whole squad.
No, make them like terrible, like stat wise terrible, but like everything's based off the force abilities because only the Jedi flew them.
Yeah.
Like an inherent ability, like free boost for a force charge or something like that. Like make it like inherently for force users would be awesome.
Oh man, William, I'm in. I'm so in. I want.
See, it'd be awesome. Right. Plus a bunch of separatist droid, like a droid swarm.
There you go. All the calculate.
Yeah, because you just said that calculate's cheaper, right? So you on like a 12-point platform, you could give it like statistically better stats then because it only gets the calculate.
Oh man, I'm starting to like foresee buzz droid cards now. Cool. It's like, oh no, you've been infested with buzz droids.
Condition, buzzed.
We called it first, folks. You're right here first at Gold Squadron Podcast.
There you go. That was terrible. Anyway,
it was. But I'm terrible.
I'm bad at the jokes. Then a couple other ones were, is it too early to talk about a potential Armada style or Hotak style campaign? So,
I think yes and no, because, you know, Heroes of the Atari Cluster is player based. I mean, player created. It's
but there was
content. So what's stopping us?
Right.
So,
and then because Armada came out with that campaign style box, so maybe FFG could do what? Because I know people just like that. Like William and I in the pre-show were talking about cooperative gaming, that brings a lot of people together, and that like cooperative gaming was the hook that brought me into competitive gaming. I was like, oh, these cool neat board games that aren't Monopoly, oh, let's work together, this is really fun, I like games, X-Wing, and then I was in. All right, so
I really like the Heroes of the Tory Cluster. I really wish we got to play more of that.
Yeah, time, man. Time.
I know. Time, money, friends, family.
And then the last question, which I think is really interesting. Somebody asked here that, and it's got no responses. Will there be a second edition event or events at Gen Con to celebrate the early release? And I think if FFG doesn't do that, I think that is a massive missed opportunity. So we'll see. We don't know.
Okay, será.
I think my only worry about Gen Con and everything is just I'm sure that they said they're gonna sell 2.0 at Gen Con, right?
Right.
Okay. Will they have enough copies? Because they've sold out of a lot of things. They sold out of Guns for Hire like very quickly last year, and a lot of people who were playing in the tournament couldn't even get a copy. This year, I think they said something where they're going to give people a ticket, and you're like, oh, you're in the tournament, you're in the Nationals thing. Cool. You get the ticket, but you only get one faction on hold or something like that.
Well, that's what they did before also, though. Well, I didn't go last year, but the year before that, they were giving out tickets. Last year,
they didn't give us tickets. Well, the people on day one got tickets, so the people on day two got nothing. And some people found a way to get many tickets and bought out extra stuff and sold it for inflated price online. It's kind of bogus, but I don't know. I'd like for them to, like, whatever they're doing is to provide enough for all their people, because of course everyone's gonna want it. Even people who don't currently play X-Wing are gonna want this because they're gonna want to convert, and everyone's gonna need several. And
yeah, we'll have to wait and see. We don't know if there is an event and how they handle. I think Nate, you do bring up a good point. How they handle product distribution, if they do have a second edition event, will definitely change the scope on how people view it. Because if stuff is readily available, or at least they are very clear on, hey guys, you know, we're having this second edition event, we have a limited amount of stuff. Maybe when you register for the event, you get something. You're like, hey, this is what you get to play with. Here's a core set and one conversion kit or something, you know. And the price is included in the event, you know. So they could do something like that. But we'll have to wait and see. Yep. And it looks like somebody here in the Twitch chat, CMaka74, says, he said he spoke to one of the devs at Worlds, I forgot who, and he said there will be a 2.0 launch event at Gen Con. Oh, well, there you go. And the
Did he have mutton chops?
FFG Twitter account also replied to me that there will be something. Ooh, okay, so we got some confirmation there from a friend of a friend. So we'll see what happens there. Let's get into the Lando's Millennium Falcon spoilers here, guys. So I think the first thing that we have to notice is that this is a scum and villainy Falcon, which I think is very appropriate. The rebellion at this time is barely born. Only the spark is about to start. And it's a scum Falcon. So here's the question for some people. Are you going to fly this model? Like, you know, with all the people who like to modify ships, like, I think we have to start being a little more picky. Like, wait, which Falcon is this? Because you have the scum Falcon, but you're using Rebel, Chewie, but it's the resistant, you know. Just we got so many of them now, you actually got to pay attention to which one's on the table.
That's no different than what we do now, because, I mean, it's like, oh, is this Imperial Boba Fett or is this Scum Boba Fett? That's not a huge issue.
No, I'm not. I'm being facetious.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think the important part is we've got a third Falcon. How many can we actually field? And we're kind of forced on us. Three Falcons. Can we field three generic Falcons in any faction, in any list?
No.
Because There's
I don't know. Outer Rim Smugglers. 27 points.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well,
wasn't there someone that did like three resistance sympathizers or something?
No, you can fit two.
You can fit two? That's it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about like in the next wave when this comes.
Because I don't know.
Not in the next week, but in 2.0. Because I mean, seriously, we've got the regular Falcon, we've got the Resistance Falcon, and now we've got this Falcon. So
I could see
me a little bit. Sorry, it bothers me a little bit when you have to buy more ships or more of the same type of ship than you are legally allowed to put on a
board.
On a board as a legal squad.
No, I get that, because like I have three of them, it's because I had two, because, you know, I ran two Falcon builds like way back in the day and everything. And then they came out with a Resistance Falcon. It's like, well, I don't need three of them. Oh, but this one's got a new dish. And it's like, I was trying to sell that thing for a while. So, but yeah, I see what Marcel is saying, is that he doesn't want to have to buy more pieces of things he already has. You don't want to buy the Malibu Stacy just because she has a new hat. Simpsons jokes, and anyone knows.
Hey, hey. It's different because the hat is new. Okay. So sorry. Malibu Stacy.
Anyway. Malibu Stacy, right?
Yes.
All right. So
don't ask me. I'm just a girl.
Let's go ahead and start breaking this down. So
why is it that everyone always gets the Simpsons jokes? I mean, I don't know.
They're
it's
great.
Our culture.
Yeah, it's the Simpsons are fantastic. Anyway, the ship, you know, it has that blue and white paint job on it, much cleaner looking. But the coolest thing with this model is that the escape pod actually physically detaches. I think that's awesome.
Mm.
I think it's really cool. That's super awesome.
Yeah. And one thing, if we zoom in to the card spread, we can actually see the ship ability for the that escape pod. And it reads, when you are docked, your carrier ship has your pilot ability in addition to its own.
Ooh.
So there's some ability sharing there. We'll see what the points cost. I mean, we don't know, right? Depending on what the points cost is on these escape pods or external shuttles or whatever they're going to end up calling them. It will.
I think it says Pioneer Craft on the quick build. Something Pioneer Craft.
Mm-hmm. Something like that. I can't. Yeah, I couldn't zoom in enough to see that one. Anyway, so that's what we see there. We get the Falcon and the escape pod. Let's go ahead and break down some pilots. What pilots are we going to be getting there, Will?
We're going to get L337, Lando's droid. Friend, I guess. We'll say friend. We'll just leave it at that.
Hey.
You know what L337 stands for, right?
Elite.
Thank you. Do you think they did that on purpose, or do you think they...
Of course they did that.
Oh, come on.
Oh, okay.
How are they not going to do that on purpose?
I have no idea.
It's just like R3K or 4 or whatever that is. Like, that's not... That, like, that was by accident.
R3KT, wrecked?
I don't know. Whatever it is, yeah.
All right, so we're getting... we don't know what her ability is in the Falcon, but if you zoom in, we actually can see her ability on the when she's a pilot on the escape craft. Now, traditionally, when these like, for instance, with the attack shuttle to the Ghost, they had the same. If you had both pilots there, L337 says. I typed it out somewhere here. Where did I put that ability? Anyway, I'll just zoom in and read it again. So it says, if you are not shielded, decrease the difficulty of your bank maneuvers. So your whites become blue, your reds become white, and your blues become baby blue. That's not true. They're just blue again. And with the dial that we do get to see there, that's going to help, meaning you could actually have a white stop. Oh, sorry. That's for the banks. Sorry. Was thinking about fail. Never mind. Edit that out of your brain. I got excited there. A little bit tired here. So you can end up with three banks that are green, which cover a lot of space. I like that. But again... If you're we don't know how these ships are going to function in the game. So maybe if you're deploying those, you might be losing the game anyway. But you can redock, so there's all that cool stuff. There's going to be a Lando pilot. What is that ability there, Marcel?
After you roll, dice. If you are not stressed, you may gain one stress token to reroll all of your blank results. It's kind of like a ray, but based on stress instead of arc. So, it's good.
Works for offense and defense, right?
Yeah, it's both offense and defense. Nice. It's good. It's I would say more than good. It's clutch. You know, you got when you pair it with the with you know the green or the, oh, I'm sorry, the blue. When you pair it with blue maneuvers and everything else, it's definitely good. Is it better than Ray? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it also is going to be dependent on the dial, how good this is, because if this is supposed to be a gamble, and we talked about earlier, the customized YT-1300 light freighter might have a different dial than the modified, which is on the Rebel side, being stressed might be worse for this or better. Like, we don't know where that's going to land, because we don't know what this dial is going to end up looking like.
Well, it synergizes really good with if you have a L3 docked in there, if you're getting the bank greens.
Yeah, three bank green, baby.
Or blue.
Blue, ah. You, Will, you missed
it. I got you on it.
And we're going to be getting a Han Solo pilot. You can see that from the threat cards, but we don't know what his ability is going to be in this Falcon. And then we got 7 of the 13 upgrade cards revealed. First one there is Tactical Scrambler. We've actually seen that one previously. While you obstruct an enemy ship's attack, the defender rolls one additional defense dice. We see that there is going to be a Lando's Millennium Falcon title, but we have no clue what that does. Do we want to speculate? What do you guys think it'll do?
I got an idea.
Go for it.
When you reroll a dice, you can always like make one guaranteed.
I'm going to go with another one. When you're in trouble, you can tuck tail and hide. Or run away, maybe like a slam or something.
Okay. Nate, what would be your idea of a thematic Lando's
title? I'm thinking about the scene in the bar where, you know, he has like a card up his sleeve and everything. So I'm trying to think about, is there something like that where it's like, oh, yo, trick card or something, where he's able to kind of do one other thing, like deny something. I don't know. Basically, make his own self like have an extra advantage, probably.
Okay. And let's see. My guess would be, man, that's a tough. Maybe kind of playing off of what Nate was saying with giving your opponent a disadvantage. Maybe you can take a stress token to make your opponent reroll a dice on offense or defense. That could be a possibility. We see that Kira is getting some type of crew card, most likely. Probably not a gunner card, but there's going to be a Kira card. We have Illicit, the rigged cargo chute. That's for medium and large bases only. We've seen this one before as well. As an action, spend one charge and drop one loose cargo using the one straight template. And then we also have the Chewbacca crew. Now, if you zoom in and assume a couple of words that seem to be there, you get at the start of the end phase, you may spend one focus token to repair a face up damage card. What are your thoughts on that, Marcel?
At the start of the end phase, you may spend. Does it look like there's more text in there beyond that?
No, I think that I'm pretty sure that's it.
Expensive is what I think. Because it's better than R2-D2, so yeah, that's the only thing I can think about. It's just it's got to be costed pretty well, but it's a better version of all the different things that they've tried to do for regen on the scum side. Mm-hmm. So it gives it some scum regen. I don't know how I feel about this, because I'm not a big fan of regen, never have been. Now, when they say repair, have they said repair means get rid of the damage?
Means flip down.
Okay.
Repair is just flip it face down. So like,
okay, so it's it not, takes a crit. Okay, so if it's so it, so you're not getting rid of the card, you're just getting rid of critical.
Mm-hmm.
So it's borrowing off of what it does on the rebel side. Actually, in that case, I think it's fine.
That'd be great against what's the really annoying crit that you can't get rid of currently? The one with the hard turns,
damage engine.
Yeah,
and your agility too.
Yeah,
your agility can't be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, it depends on how expensive it is, because you've got 8 hull, and after you start taking damage and you get a critical, how much do you want to spend to get rid of a critical when you're already starting to bleed hull? So I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see. It depends on how much it costs, but interesting. It's
there could be some like
that already.
Say that again.
There's a card like that exists already though in version 1, isn't there?
It's a droid.
Yep.
Yeah. And how much play does that get?
Not much, but again, second edition, different beast, right? Like, we don't know what's going to be good or bad. Mm-hmm. We know nothing. We're like babies again. Then we got a Han Solo Gunner card, a different Han Solo Gunner card, because we have one already, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this one is, before you engage, you may perform a red focus action. So, before mm-hmm. engagement, that is your
start of combat.
Your turn to attack or defend, right?
I think it's when you activate.
That is a question that I do have, actually, is whether or not
when activate.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, because it's really different, because if it's engage means your turn to shoot, then it's an offensive card. But if engage means activate, then it's
both. I think they've worded things at the start of the engagement phase before, though.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this right. this seems like it'd be new wording or new timing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool, yeah. So it would be a little bit of a new timing. You do a red focus. I mean, this is one of those probably when you're in a sticky situation or you have something lined up, you have a lock on it, and you're like, all right, I want to make sure that I dig in some damage here, get a double modifier. Because it seems like it's harder in second edition to have double modifiers on the same turn.
Yeah.
So
not only that, I mean, since it happens during the engagement phase and everybody has already finished their movements, you already have... You don't have to stress before everything else moves. At this point, you know where you are, and you have an idea whether you're going to use whether you're going to take a blue maneuver your next turn or not.
Right.
Like at this point, you already know. Okay, am I going to have to do a white maneuver, or can I do a blue one mm-hmm. from here? So it's.
I think another main advantage with it would be that it works when you're blocked. You don't have to perform a regular action first.
Right, because if they block you,
I didn't even. Yeah, it's dauntless. There you go. Wow.
Yep. That's essentially what it is. It's a little bit of a dauntless, but a very specific. You have to do a focus. Now, I want to get to Tobias Beckett. I think this is my, so far in this pack, it is my favorite upgrade. I think it's super cool. And I have a bunch of questions about it that I want to talk to you guys about. So it says scum only. And it says setup. So that means during the setup, right? After placing forces, you may choose one obstacle in the play area. So this means everything has been set. Place forces includes also putting out your asteroids and debris and whatever future obstacles we get. If you do... Place it anywhere, this one that you chose, place it anywhere in the board beyond range 2 of any board edge or ship and beyond range 1 of other obstacles. So essentially what you're doing, if you want to simplify that wording, is that you are moving one of the obstacles on the table to a different position, a different legal position on the board. I love this.
I have so many questions about it too. My first one is, what if you can't move the rock?
What if you can't move the what?
What if there's now no legal place for the rock? Because it says range two of any ship.
It does.
So if you put a ship near that rock and then took it the rock away, and what if you couldn't put the rock back on the board?
I find it difficult for a 3x3 and 6 obstacles to not have a range one legal place. Maybe you can't put it where you wanted to put it originally, but once you pick it up, you have to. Even if you fit it in the same spot where it was before, it won't be in the exact same spot, in the exact same direction, in the exact same. So it will have changed. Even if you only pick it up and put it back down, it's
tweaked it a
changed.
Bit.
Yeah, you moved it centimeters or millimeters in one direction, or you changed the angle of it, but it's moved at that point. Yeah. So no. I don't see this being.
We're going to have to experiment with that.
Yeah,
what are your other questions, Dion?
So strategically, let me tell you some things I'm excited about it. Like, I'm thinking, if I have a squad where I know, for instance, large asteroids give me problems, and I like to bring the small ones. Obviously, it has to be a scum squad if I'm using this. But I like to get the rocks out of the way. I bring the smallest ones possible. And the smaller rocks you bring and smaller obstacles you bring, the more options you give yourself with Tobias. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if that opponent put that one rock, you're like, that's the rock that's going to screw me. Oh, good thing I brought Tobias. Beckett, we're going to shift this, 2-2 in the opposite corner. Because, everything else is spread out. Or just make a cluster on another side and say, I'm going to fight on this side now. Like, it brings that. If you see that across the table competitively, you see Tobias Beckett, you have to be, in your mind, you have to understand, okay, any one of my rocks can be moved, and can I live with it? And I just like I'm a big fan of making the setup phase more a part of the game and making it matter more. So strategically, I think this is a really cool card, and I like that that they made this. So I'm super excited for it.
So is this going to do that whole thing where it's like, do you place your rock in the one spot, or do you place that rock in the spot that you think that they're going to change it? But then what if they think that you think that they know that you know kind of thing? I don't know. And that's where you get crazy with it.
Oh, yeah. So
what would you pay for that, though? What do you think the cost for this ability would be?
And that is my question currently on the on the live chat here. So we're in second edition, right? So you remember we're in a 200-point scale before you answer the question. And my question to the chat is, do you think Tobias Beckett will cost less than 6 points, that's a one, or greater than 6 points? So what do you think, Marcel?
So, okay, 6 points is 3. I think it'll be less.
You think it's less?
Yeah, I think it'll be 4. I would probably go 4 points max, maybe 3 for him.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 3. That sounds about right.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, you get to change
situational.
Something. I mean,
it's like, one-time use.
At the very beginning. It's kind of like, the new Han Solo, like the Resistance Han Solo. It's like, you get the thing at the start of the game, and then you're worthless for the rest of it kind of thing.
All right, that's good points. I also think it's probably going to be less than 6, but I think it's going to be one of these cards that in the hands of a really skilled player who's taken the time to think about how this one upgrade can change the game for their squad, you got to watch out for it because it could be dangerous.
Oh, yeah, because there are definitely the formation flyers who definitely require like a certain like lanes or anything. I know like a lot of those, Marcel, especially with his 3 jumps, he wanted the map a certain way. So then this could be a perfect way for him to get that kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. And with these, especially with these dual turret ships and how nobody has 360, this could be a way to manipulate the field in order to make sure that you can get shots consistently. So my next question to everybody is, do you guys, obviously we don't know, but one thing I'd like to think about right away is, do we think the ship is going to be competitive, or is it just way too early to call?
It's too early. Everything's too early. We don't know what
we don't know what's going to be competitive.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, here's one thing.
Go ahead. Theory could be something, but just until we get point values and cost and like actually get to see everything, then it's all just speculative. I'm kind of waiting for everything to be laid out.
Right.
Go ahead.
One thing I was going to say that I believe, unless I'm forgetting one, this will be, at the time of the release, the only double rotating arced ship that Scum has. Because the Jumpmaster is a single rotating arc. The Shadowcaster is a single rotating arc with a front arc.
It's got a single rotating arc with a front arc, so it could shoot out two different ways then, right?
Yeah, but it's not opposite.
So this Scum Falcon will be the only one of its kind in the Scum fleet upon release. So it has its own niche. We'll see if it's good. We have no idea. And now we're going to reiterate the fact that if you have not seen Solo, A Star Wars Story, please turn away or turn it off. Now, here we go. You had your chance.
Hit to us to the dice, whatever, SL, whatever.
Darth Maul shows up again.
I think you guys skipped over the two dice part, but...
Oh, sorry. That's right. Sorry. My bad.
That's a big thing, dude. I don't know. You guys, I feel like you guys just skipped over it, but I think that's a big deal.
Didn't we mention it? I thought... No, maybe I'm thinking about the question we asked earlier. So...
With a two dice attack, or...
It has a two dice attack only, yes.
Yeah, we already talked about that. But it'll also get an inherent boost as well, which is kind of nice. But a stress boost.
But that should make it cheaper, right? Maybe you could fit three of them naked?
Maybe. Three, because a dice is valuable. Now, here is one simple way. Now, I don't think that they'll do this, but if they put the title and make that, give it an extra dice, that could be a possibility. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't seem thematic because, like, he had that, like, single cannon on the top and the bottom. Like, it wasn't those, like, quad laser things that the Falcon, that Han puts on there later.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, I think that's going to be, it'll have other purposes, I think. It's not going to be putting out a ton of damage. It's going to be there to help out in other ways. It has to be. But... You know, it'll be a lot more, especially the Lando one will be a lot more accurate than some of the other two dice ships.
Mm-hmm. Because it gets those rerolls on the stress.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. So now we're going to jump to Solo, A Star Wars Story for real this time. And the first thing I want to talk about is the implications for X-Wing, the possible implications, and the one ship that I think we saw that we probably will for sure get, besides the Falcon, which I think we all knew we would end up getting, is the TIE RB, or the nickname, which is the TIE Brute. A couple of lore things about it that I did research for you guys. It's 60% slower than a normal TIE fighter. It has 60% of the speed of a TIE fighter, so 40% slower. It also has no shields, has a thicker hull. The cannons are stronger than the TIE fighter, so maybe three dice if we get it in the game. And the gun on the side actually pivots. It can shoot backwards if it wanted to. It can't go left and right because it has, like, its wings, obviously. But it could pivot to the back. So that might be a ship that if they released it, maybe you have, like, the side arcs. Like, you're not allowed to turn it there if it has a rotating arc. Like, a single rotating arc that can only go front or back. Maybe. Who knows? I'm curious to see if we'll ever get to see what Emphas Nest's ship looks like. Because that her gang ends up moving from like one planet to another, but you never see what ship they take. So maybe we can see that in there. I don't know. Do you guys see any other ships that I'm not thinking of? Silence.
I'm trying to think.
Hmm. I only saw it once.
There's so that giant space hotel that Dryden Voss has, but I think that's probably too big to fit next week.
I don't know. They could pick like another random junk ship in like the background and make it the Quad Jumper 2.
Sure. Why not? The Quad Jumper is a fun and wholesome ship. Don't make fun of the Quad Jumper. All right. So let's just kind of blaze through a couple questions here. Marcel, who was your favorite new character?
Oh, God. I'm trying to remember this now. Good Lord. The Solo movie. My favorite new character. New.
Kira is Darth Plagueis. Sorry, spoilers. Yeah.
Lies.
No, actually, I wasn't a big fan of Kira. I was not a big fan.
I want to know the favorite. I want the one that you like the most. We'll get to the ones you don't like in a
minute. All right, start with somebody else and let me think about it because I have a hard time.
Okay.
Because a lot of the new characters I did not enjoy as much as just seeing some of the oldies.
Nate.
Lando.
He's not new. How is he
new?
He's
not new. Sorry. I mean, it's like old Lando. New characters. Give me a second too.
Oh my god.
How do you not like Tobias Beckett? Woody Harrelson.
Because it's Woody Harrelson being Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, I agree.
He was my favorite. It's new
not
character.
Like it's not like, oh man, that's a totally new character. It's like, no, that's Woody Harrelson being Woody Harrelson character.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you start.
My favorite new character was L3. I really enjoyed her. That droid was hilarious. She was like comic relief, but at the same time, like, did bring up some good points in Star Wars, like how the droids, they're treated like crap constantly. I found that really entertaining to see things from her point of view. And the fact that her brain is part of the Falcon that we see in episode 4, 5, and 6. And even in the Last Jedi novelization, they actually talk about that the Falcon has 3 droid brains. We now know that, at least when it comes to the navigation side, that brain belongs to L3. And they actually, the author describes L3's personalities. Like, one of the droids is like this, one of the other ones like this. And the third one, he ends up describing L3's personality to the T. So that was pretty entertaining there. So now that I've stalled out for you guys, favorite new character.
All right, so I'm gonna go with I'm probably gonna go with Dryden Voss, and it's just because I'm a huge fan of Paul Bettany, and even going back to like what's his name, Heath Ledger, the Knight, A Knight's Tale,
A Knight's Quest. No,
it's The Knight's Tale.
You're right.
You know, when he's walking around naked and, you know, just kind of like, anyway, so I like the character, but on top of that, I like that even though he died, they put such a, he's a bad guy, but he's not a
typical bad guy.
Yeah. I mean, he did something. He put himself and he put trust in Kira and he had good traits but was a bad person but with good traits, and he manipulated, and I just thought that his character was well put together. It was you didn't know if you really wanted to hate him or if you feel kind of bad for him, because he's kind of a bit of a sucker, even though he's obviously pretty ruthless. So I don't know. So I'm going to go with him.
Patrick says he's a bad guy, but he doesn't make him a bad guy. Quote from Wreck-It Ralph.
There you go. Thank you. He gets me. Patrick, you get me.
Nate?
What was the name of the centipede lady in the water?
Shoot.
Yeah, she was like one of the syndicate, or not? She was one of the.
Proxima, yeah, like no, Lady the, Proxima.
Because no, I liked like that whole thing where it's like, oh, they got this little kind of like, you know, smuggler cult or street rat cult, and she was kind of like cultivating it. What's actually interesting, I kind of appreciated about this movie is if you ever read the Han Solo trilogy, like the books are actually were some of like the 3-part series about the Han Solo trilogy. It was one of my favorite series growing up as a kid. And there are actually some slight parallels between the book and the movie. They're not exact. I never thought they were going to do that, but there's some kind of things that they kind of kept in some kind of shape or form anyways. But I thought that was cool.
Yeah. So now we'll get to, who was your least favorite character? It doesn't have to be new or old, just like somebody who you were watching and went, ah. I'll let you go first, Marcel.
Oh God, no! I'm gonna. People are gonna hate me. Kira, I couldn't stand her.
Really?
And I love her in Game of Thrones. Like,
well, did you see Kira or did you see Daenerys Targaryen?
I was seeing Daenerys Targaryen as not Daenerys Targaryen. Yeah. No, but outside of that, I see potential in the character. So I see potential. I see a part two. I see, more evolution either in books or in part two or in books. I said books, part two, or in video games where they go into, different parts of the syndicate, different parts of the crime, scum side of it. So I see a lot of potential there, and I see a lot of tie in with a lot of the old stories, but just for the movie, for the character, to me, it just wasn't good. I mean, sorry. And I like her so much.
It's okay. It's all right. You could write her a letter when we're done.
Let me down the roll.
Say that again. Sorry, you cut off.
I said, Emilia, you let me down. She should have turned it down.
What about you, William?
It's also Kira. Also my least favorite for basically everything Marcel said. Like, she's got no character arc. And,
is not interesting.
He was just always had the same thing going on.
Yeah, it's a mystery. You don't know. It's a mystery. You don't know.
Shut up. Yeah, I just didn't. No, I didn't like her. No, no arc.
Double agent. Whatever.
All right, Nate.
So, you're gonna hate me, Dion, but I'm sorry. I found L3 to be what? Way,
no,
way
you're off the podcast. I'm done with you.
Too strong of a character. I mean, I understand, like, yo, they're trying to like make this thing, and you know, some people can play online about like social justice. That's not my issue. I just felt like, oh, it's fun, but just was way, way too strong. Like, I mean,
she was.
I think about like,
fine, you have your opinion. Go ahead.
But like K2SO, I felt like he was the right amount, like in the middle there. He had his quirks, he had his like funny comments and everything, but he wasn't like this abrasively in your face kind of way about it. It just was too much for me. I just kind of rolled my eyes.
The part that makes me roll my eyes about Leet or whatever her name is yeah, A, they tried too hard, but two, it seems like as the movies progress backward, back into like old times. Mm-hmm. Even going back to the whole three movies that we dare not speak about. the droids have a personality and have this type of AI and have this sense of self that completely lacks in movies that are supposed to come beyond that, you know, like the original saga, the original trilogy.
Well, I mean, R2-D2.
Yeah, R2-D2 has some character. He has some. Character.
Some? Are you kidding?
He's some hilarious. Character. He does. But you don't understand none of it. And then C-3PO is like the void of, I mean, I don't know. It just feels, you know, like they're adding more character to droids in the past, and they've lost character as time has passed versus gained character. Just and in The Force Awakens, I mean, what droid have you seen? You know, even BB-8. You know, BB-8. You're going back to the whole you know, beep, 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 you know, not really talking, not really, mm-hmm. you know, they show preference and they show some free will, but, you know, they don't have the character. They don't have the dialogue. They don't have the, you know, those things that those older Joyce Kate.
Yeah, but K-2, 3PO and K2 both had the dialogue and the character. They were interesting.
C-3PO? I don't think so. I thought C-3PO was boring.
Did you?
Yeah.
Hmm. He was kind of like the Debbie Downer. Is that you? Every outfit needs a straight man, right? And C-3PO is a straight man.
Hmm. There you go.
Well, so, but Dion, I got to get going. So
okay.
I'm going to sign off right now. I hope everyone has a great night. I hope to see you guys at System Open and at Origins.
All right. So my least favorite character, honestly, there was nobody who personally to me stood out like, oh, I need to be without you. If I had to nitpick, it might honestly be Dryden Vos for me. Yeah. Yeah. He just seemed angry for no reason. Like, I get he was trying to get stuff done. I understand.
No reason.
For no reason, he works for Darth Maul.
I know, but I'm saying, like, he was just...
If Darth Maul is your boss, you should be angry.
Right. I'm just saying, like, he was like, you didn't finish this thing. I'm out all this stuff. I'm going to murder you. I'm still out all this stuff. Like, I don't know. It's just... I mean, like...
Yeah, he was actually kind of nice. He didn't kill a lot of people that he could have. He didn't kill... what's his name? Beckett when he failed the first time. He's like, all right, I'm going to let you go. Give you another shot.
Yep. I mean, I thought it was interesting. Okay, again, this is, if I'm nitpicking, he's maybe the one I'm like, he's all right. Single favorite part of the movie. Anybody?
I'm trying to think.
Anything that really stood out to you? So I'll say.
Go ahead.
For me, it was the how Han and Chewie met. Like, I love that sequence. I thought it was great. The fact that we learned that Chewie most definitely ate people. When they're like, oh, we haven't fed him in 3 days. They're like, oh, crap, they've been feeding him by throwing them people and deserters. Chewie's eating people. Like, that whole sequence, I really enjoyed that quite a bit.
I enjoyed the whole train heist. It's just good action. Good old, you know, dumb action. I liked it.
Yeah, that was really good. William?
Well,
I'm trying to think of what's the game they play, Sabacc?
Yep.
I liked when they first entered and met Lando and were playing Sabacc. Like, you really saw like a little bit more of Han than just like I don't know. It was like the first time I think he like proved himself that he could actually do something.
Rather than just being lucky.
Yeah, like he was actually like, I don't know. Maybe I'm overlooking the game of Sabacc or something, but I just thought that was cool. Like, it wasn't, I don't know. It felt like really saw who those characters were and that kind of thing. And they're both like lying and hustling each other. I think that's a really interesting way to introduce Lando. And show how the Falcon gets involved in everything.
Absolutely. And I think that actually leads perfectly into the next point I want to bring up is the actor's name who played Han Solo was Alden Ehrenreich. I believe that's how his last name is pronounced. Was he a convincing Han Solo for you? Like, did you start the movie and go, hey, this guy's Han Solo? Or how far in were you able to subvert your thoughts about Harrison Ford?
I did not start off saying like, oh, this is Han Solo, but I think towards the end of the movie, I still didn't think it was Han Solo, but I thought it was the right character for the, I mean, the right actor for the role. So I guess he was okay. I mean, Harrison Ford is such a, you know, he's so famous and he's been in so many things and he's easily recognizable. I mean, you can't replace Harrison Ford ever. It's like trying to get somebody else to play Clint Eastwood. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So you just got to kind of do your best. So, you know, some of the things that caught me off mm-hmm. is I usually like when casting directors or casting, whatever they call them, where they take people that have facial structures that you can say, well, as they get older, you know, this usually happens. And I know it's really nitpicky, but like Alden, you know, he's got a really thin jaw, a really thin, I mean, it's just the facial structure would never become Harrison Ford. If you played them as father and son, you would never buy it. Mm-hmm. So I kind of wanted somebody that has more of a facial appearance, more physical resemblance.
I could see that.
But outside of the physical resemblance, the acting itself was good. The one I had a problem was with Childish Gambino, but that's probably because I know him from so many other things that it's hard to put him as Lando because I know him from his music. I know him from his stand up. I know him from his sitcoms. He's just been in so many different roles that Danny Glover, you know who he is. Well, I know who he is. And it's hard for me to see him as Lando because of him already being famous in so many different other roles, whether it's singing, rapping, comedy, or acting.
Mm-hmm. William?
I don't know about the actor, but I guess I would describe it as like Harrison Ford like never made any jokes. Like just what he said was funny.
Right.
And I feel like this Han Solo was cracking jokes, which I think is kind of out of character. But I mean, this is like maybe, you know, this is less hardened though, so maybe, you know, he's got younger. A little bit more.
He's 10 youth years, in him. 10 years younger than when we see him.
So I guess it's just got like that mimicking that like Iron Man or Star Lord or that like plunky hero.
Okay.
Right. And I don't know. I always thought Han Solo was more serious. And he wasn't cracking jokes at all.
I see that. Yeah, I could see that. So for me, one thing that I usually watch when it comes to actors is body language. And the amount of work that Alden put into mimicking the body language of Harrison Ford as Han Solo was fantastic. Like, there were several moments where, I mean, it's just small stuff, like the way he moved his head when he was talking and just like slight motions where I was like, this is Han Solo. Like, it just, for me, like, I really was able to be drawn into him. And I would honestly say within the first 15 minutes of the movie, maybe even less, I was convinced that he was Han Solo. So that was for me. I could definitely see what you were saying, Marcel, with the facial structure being different. And yeah, he was definitely a little more jokey, like you said, Will, for sure. And there was a lot of big moments in the movie, which I don't mean to skip past them, but we're running a little long on time. The one I do want to address here is Darth Maul. Or, sorry, not Darth anymore, just Maul. He's that big reveal at the end of the movie. He's the one that's been running Crimson Dawn. I thought, like, when they showed him, I was super excited, but at the same time, I felt a little dumb not guessing that he would be there, especially with the name Crimson Dawn. Crimson, like, come on. Crime Syndicates. I've watched all the Clone Wars. I know that he is involved in this the scum and villainy area with all the, you know, all the crime syndicates and the spice and all that. Like, I felt like I was like, man, how did I not call that? What was your guys' reaction?
I had to Google it right after. So right after the movie ended, I was in the car and I Googled all of it. And then I'm like, ah, okay. That makes sense. Actually, I Googled Kira. I'm like, who the heck is this Kira person? And then from Googling Kira, I actually ran into, you know, Maul and seeing his involvement in the Syndicate and in the Crimson Dawn and just see, you know, what happened after he got, you know, chopped in half. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. But yeah, I didn't pay much attention to it other than at the end I Googled it.
Will?
I think it would be interesting, like, they're doing the Boba Fett and Obi-Wan movies. I think it would be interesting to have, like, Maul be, like, the overarching villain amongst all the, like, that anthologies trilogy.
That'd be cool.
Like, if the Boba Fett movie was, like you would see Han and Chewie in the movie, but it'd be mostly about Boba Fett doing, like, the Tatooine missions and stuff with Jabba. But, like, Maul's involved with that as well. Mm. I think that would be very interesting if they kind of maybe linked it together. It would just be bad if it was just a throwaway, because I want to see more Maul.
Yeah, I mean, he's an awesome character. He's very captivating.
I think you have to. I mean, once they reveal him, they're basically opening the, you know, think about it from Disney or Lucas, you know, the you know, from the money machine. Maul is part of that money machine. So once they reveal him, he has to be either part of a cartoon series, a video game, or a follow up movie, because you got to milk the cash cow. And Maul is part of that cash cow.
Yeah, and then I just thought it was awesome that Disney had the cojones to put Maul in this movie, because let's say it's a person who's only ever watched the movies, and you see in episode one that Darth Maul dies, right? Or you thought he died when he got chopped in half. He's like, of course he's dead. And then you get to Solo and you go, what? This guy? Like, they put a lot of, they had a lot of balls to be able to give the viewer the responsibility of either already knowing that he's alive or being able to find it out. Whether it's something, like you said, Marcel, being able to Google and go, oh, that's what happened. And, you know, there's plenty of people who talk about Star Wars specifically, and they've covered his story, and there's tons of YouTube videos about Maul and his ascension.
I'll go a different route. Most people will, the person that I saw it with, not a huge Star Wars fan, but has seen all of the movies, said, oh, who's that guy with the spikes? And then later on was like, oh yeah, oh okay, I remember that. I remember the red pokey guy. Mm-hmm. So I think for the Star Wars nerds, they'll be able to say, oh, that's Maul. But for other people, it's like, ah, who's that guy? Okay, well, it's whatever, some boss. Some evil boss.
Some evil guy. He must be evil because he has red...
Spikes
and a red lightsaber. Awesome. Well, that was fun talking about Solo. I have seen it 4 times total.
What?
I have seen it 4 times, yes.
I'm jealous.
Well, I have to say that it's actually more like 3.25 times. Because when I was in California, I went to go see it with Dee and Nate, and I think Ryan was there and his son was there, and I was just super tired, and I actually fell asleep during the movie, but I had seen it already twice, so I didn't feel super bad, but I also got a slight nap. But yeah, Neil Saturn is...
Red pokey guy alt art win.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's happening.
From Neil Setter. We can make that happen. But I want to say thank you to everybody who watched tonight. Thank you to everybody who's listening. Of course, you can watch our live X-Wing events and content on twitch.tv/Gold Squadron Podcast. We have the Columbus System Open coming up this weekend. That is June, what is this? Friday, Saturday. So that's June 15th and 16th. And the Seattle System Open the following weekend. I cannot go any farther also without saying Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there, and also to you know, anybody who is a father figure in somebody's life, whether that be a single mom or a grandparent or whoever, happy Father's Day. I'm going to be super excited to be driving back very quickly from Columbus and spend Father's Day with my family. It's good times. You can watch the...
Aww.
Yeah, I love it. Happy Father's Day, Marcel.
Thank you.
Yeah. William, I mean, I don't know. Happy Father's Day, maybe? I don't know what you got going out in the world. Turns out he had 3 kids we never knew about. lastly, if you enjoy the show and you want to help us continue expanding our content while getting awesome swag, go to patreon.com/goldsquadron. I just revealed the Soontier Fell alt art. And one thing for our $5 patrons that's going to be exclusive to you guys is instead of having just a, you know, Empire symbol card backing, you actually will have the full art unobstructed as the back. So even if second edition ends up going poof and we go to third edition one day, you still have an awesome piece of art there that you can show off, put up on a wall as a frame or something like that, or decorate something. It's a really great piece of art. So if you haven't checked it out, that picture of that is on our Facebook. It's all on our also on our Patreon. And the next upcoming swag shipment is going to be that Soontier Fell, the updated 2.0 Nora Wexley, and one other pilot that is to be announced. So thank you, everybody. For Marcel and Nate and William, my name's Dion. Gold Squadron, out.